Powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. Robot Building Supplies. Robots got it. Afternoons on SEN.
Yes, hello. Great to have your company this afternoon here on SEN. Dwayne's World. Sam Edmund with you. The Pipe, Dwayne Russell. Just day two into his little week of rest and relaxation. But Sam Edmund with you. Formula doesn't change in here. We spoke about this yesterday, didn't we? It is still your show, still your three-hour block. Anything and everything on the agenda this afternoon. Got something you want to get off your chest? Got a point you want to make? Let us know anytime. 1-300-736-736 is the open line for Werribee Kia. Business continues with social distancing, of course. And 0433-981116 on the Speckle text. Speckle cash loans up to $2,000 paid fast. Huge Tuesday afternoon in store. We're going to have a chat to the list manager, Terry Wallace, of course. Player will join us very, very shortly. Chris Grant at the Western Bulldogs, former great. Might even be in a poll at the moment on sen.com.au as we continue our search for the greatest All-Australian team of the AFL era. Andrew Gaze, basketball icon, will join us a bit later on. How good was The Last Dance last night? We knew how it ended. The way it was told, though, was every bit as good as we'd hoped for. It was absolutely spine-tingling. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on The Last Dance and its climax as well as the afternoon unfolds. And we'll go back into clubland as well with Sean Higgins, North Melbourne veteran. Just how are the Kangaroos going about it? What are their groups of eight? How are they coping? And just how are they handling the restrictions and the protocols that have been put in the face of the players, which some people say are massively over the top? Most of us, though, think this is simply the price they have to pay to get this game back up and going. I'm sure Sean is in that basket. And we'll do a bit of cricket as well with Sophie Molyneux, of course, one of the stars of Australia's T20 World Cup win back in March against India at the MCG. Dwayne's World brought to you by Robot Building Supplies. They've got it and they deliver. Robotbuildingsupplies.com.au. And we're powered by Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. Get in touch with us anytime, as I say. But one thing caught my eye yesterday, and there's a lot of press conferences yesterday. One of them was by Heath Shaw, the GWS veteran, of course, won a premiership at Collingwood, searching for one at GWS near the end of his career. And he spoke a lot about the football department's soft cap cutting that's so savage and so cruel in a lot of ways, and a lot of people losing their jobs at the moment in the football world, as they are in wider society, of course. None is more important than the other. But with the cap down to 25 people in a football department now, he sure was saying, could we see the return of the playing coach? Now, I'm not talking about the pure playing coach, the senior coach like Ted Whitten, Jack Dyer, or maybe Dick Reynolds, although I'm sure there's some romantics amongst you who would like to see that. Heath Shaw was more referring to the assistant development space and players who have done this in the past, but we might see a lot more of them doing so. Let's have a listen to Heath Shaw yesterday on the thinking that we might see more playing coaches.
I think so. Yeah, if you can, it's a little bit about playing that dual role. Like if you can be a player on a list but still doing a coaching role, whether it would be development or helping out with the reserves comp, if that comes back in the next couple of years, I think that's definitely an option, and I think a lot of clubs will look at that going forward because, like I said, we've had to cut back a fair bit, and if guys can play dual roles at clubs, it helps out the club and it will even help out the development of that person if they want to go into coaching after their playing career. Cutting back on staff is something that all clubs have had to do, but it just means other people have to pick up the slack. And I know as sort of an older statesman and one of the more experienced players and a few of the other older guys, we're probably going to have to help a little bit more in terms of that leadership, and it might even be in coaching as well. So, and we understand that, and like I said, we're willing to do anything to get us into a position to win a premiership, and if that means putting in a bit extra time, doing some extra stuff, then we're going to have to do it. So it's something that, again, it's been thrust upon us, but you just got to roll with the punches, and I think everyone's embracing that.
Is Heath Shaw on the money there? And would you like to see more playing coaches? Give us your thoughts. 1-300-736-736 on the Werribee Kia open line, or the speckle text, of course, 0433-981116. Well, a man who played with great distinction, he certainly coached with great distinction. I'm not sure what his thoughts would be about doing both at the same time. Terry Wallace, SEN and AFL Nation commentator, thanks for joining us, player. Are you there, player? We got you.
Yeah, I've certainly, yeah, it's a really interesting one, isn't it? How it all plays out, and Shorey's call there was quite right. I mean, you've only got to go back to times past where Sam Reed actually at GWS started off. He retired and ended up going into a development role, then come back to playing, and was sort of juggling the two up there at GWS in the early days. So it's been done before, and there'll be a lot of creative thinking around this time about how clubs go about it. I think probably in my time in the game, this is the biggest opportunity to get an advantage in the way that you go about things against the other side in this season. You know, number one, who you select as your part of your 25 staff members, and where you put the emphasis, how you go about training in this period of time before games resume. I think you can get a real definite advantage this time around, and some will do it well, and some will wonder, what really went wrong for them.
Well, you touched on something really interesting there, player, because Luke Beveridge was interesting listening last night, the Western Bulldogs coach, and he's talking about the gut-wrenching nature of it, and it's been soul-destroying, and the cuts are definitely that. They are the challenges, but there's opportunity, as you mentioned. So put your coaching hat back on. Take us back into club land. Where and what would you be doing to perhaps get a jump for this unprecedented season?
Yeah, look, I think that certainly the areas that I would be concentrating on is making sure medical, physical, so strength and conditioning, and the planning that goes around that, and the mental aspect of the game. My emphasis would be on that. I think that we've already seen North Melbourne cut a couple of their line coaches, and yeah, we'll see a broader base from some of the footy people, making sure that they can cover off, you know, less people doing more, and you know, multi-skilled personnel within the football department. There'll be a lot of changes and challenges in that area. But the one that I would want to get right, I would think that you would trust yourself enough in your systems and structures, what you've got in place and what you've been able to generate. Probably a little bit more difficult for the guys who are the new coaches, but those who are established, I'd be backing in our structures and systems, having less in our coaching division, but making sure that the strength and conditioning and mental side of things, and you know how our preparation is going to look different, you know, that we really cover off that side of it.
It's fascinating, isn't it, player? Because we've already seen the difference in approach between a successful and an older head coach in the form of Damien Hardwick, and then a relatively new coach in Gold Coast, Stuart Jew, when it comes to picking their groups of eight. Now, Stuart Jew told us that he would be, you know, and it made sense from the outside looking in, that he wouldn't put all his eggs in one basket, have a mix of players in each particular group of eight, just in case, heaven forbid, someone went down with COVID-19 and they had to be quarantined. They wouldn't lose an entire line of their side. But Damien Hardwick, he just said they're going to stick with what they can control, and they'll keep their mids together, their backs together, and so on. And what did you make of that? I mean, does it point to one club who's just so supremely confident in their structures and how they do things that they won't change for anything, not even a pandemic?
Yeah, well, look, I'm in Damien's, in Dimmer's side of things with this one. If it was me, I'd be putting all my better players and the players that I thought were going to play in similar positions together, and having them work and coordinate with each other as much as I possibly could. I think you've just got to run the risk of, you know, if there is a breakout. Look, if there's a breakout, we don't know what that does to the competition in general anyway. So I would be just preparing my team. I wouldn't be talking in relation to COVID-19. Let the medical and those people look after that side of it, do everything you need to do and follow their instructions. But certainly from a coaching point of view, I'd be working with my players as much as possible to make sure that they are as well ready to work together with each other as what they possibly can be. So, yeah, I'm very much in that side of the camp, because the other side of it is as well, we don't know. I mean, some of these blokes, who are the younger players who are intermingling with the senior players, they mightn't play a game of football for the entire year. So I think you've got to concentrate on those that are likely to be sort of doing the job for you on a weekly basis. It's unfortunate, but the guys who would normally start at VFL level, you don't know what's going to play out for them over the course of this season.
Player, you were known as one of the sharpest tactical match day minds in the business. What do you think will happen to the game style this year?
I'm probably coming from a different area than a lot of people here. Look, to me, I've heard a lot of people sort of saying, it'll give the players a little bit more freedom with less coaching and less instruction, and they'll just go out and play. So therefore, we might get a bit more offensive flair. I don't see it that way at all. I just sort of see that your senior coach, it's in their DNA the way that they believe the game should be played. And most senior coaches will sort of say that that has a strong defensive structure about it. I can't see how the coaches are just going to sort of say, just let the guys go out and play, let them play with a little bit more freedom, when they know in their heart of hearts that their DNA tells them that there is a certain way that they need to go about playing to give them a greater chance of success. So I still think we will get the game that we've seen over the last few years, with it being defensive oriented. I just can't for the life of me sort of see that the changes, that the coaches who are winning people are going to throw everything that they believe in out the door.
As a senior coach, player, and maybe even take us back to when you pulled the boots on as a player, could you face playing another 16 minimum, it would be, 16 exhibition games? Dennis Committee saying there should be no flag this year, there should be no Brownlow, and then you got Damien Hardwick, we mentioned earlier, who thinks it might be one of the greatest premierships ever won. What do you think of Dennis's comments yesterday?
Look, it's a long stretch between the greatest premiership ever to be won to let's not have a premiership.
No doubt.
I seem to be in Bimmer's camp here for all of these statements so far. But no, I'm certainly more on his side. I think that the challenges that are there now, the greatest of all time, not going that far, but certainly more on that side of it than it's not a season. The season has looked over the time and period a lot of different ways over a lot of different times. You go back to war times when the Geelong Highway was closed. It was actually shut down and only allowed to be used for army vehicles at the time.
That's
and
right.
So the Geelong players had to actually find new homes. There were star Geelong players who were playing with South Melbourne and Melbourne and other clubs. At the time, that was still considered to be a season and to be part of premiership success. The challenges, as we sort of said, about being smart enough to do this the right way, I think it is very much worthy of being recognised as a premiership without an asterisk next to it. As for the games and whether they what their meaning is, once it's a 4-point game. Now, I can remember going out to Waverley, going back 100 years ago and playing in those, the Escort Cup games and, whatever else they were called at the time. But they were still playing for a cup. And we took them as seriously as what we took a home and away game back in the time. No crowds out there back in those days. It was just your want and your will to go out and win. I still think this will be exactly the same. I mean, I think that, you might get some blowout games where sides have lost their way. And so there might be, a couple more sort of 100-point victories than what we've sort of seen, where sides do have a drop-off for a game. But I don't sort of see that being the way. I think that, 4 points on the line, as serious as what it can possibly be, I don't see them as exhibition games. I see what we played with the best playing the best in that pre-season for the bushfires. To me, that's an exhibition game. I don't think these will be like that.
The AFL's told the players and the clubs, obviously, player, that if they've got an interstate game, they have to fly the same day of the game, and then straight away after the game, they'll make their way to the airport to fly at home as well. But particularly flying on the morning of an interstate game, what sort of effect will that have on clubs and on players?
It's going to be interesting, isn't it? I mean, there's so many aspects to it. And, again, I'm going back in years, but I've seen some monumental disasters, you know, with planes stuck on runways, you know, fogged in, and you know, so virtually teams almost needing to get changed on the bus to go out and play, and you know, getting an according result. Just even food, you know, how they're going to sort of organise and orchestrate their food intake. It'll be a challenge, and that's why I suppose I started with the, you know, almost the most important people to me are the organisers, the people who are making sure that the players, you know, when they get out onto the ground, are as best serviced as what they possibly can to be able to do the job. So that is your strength and conditioning, your dietitians, your medical, your mental aspect to make sure all those are right, because I think, to me, that's going to be the greatest challenge of the lot, getting that side of it right rather than the footy side.
Plough, right before we went to air, now news came about on Fox Sports that there'd been a spat between Morgan Mitchell, who's an Olympic athlete, and Collingwood. Morgan Mitchell was training at Olympic Park, and she had a bit of a run-in with the football club about access to the ground. I mean, did you ever have... It's a fascinating time at Clubland at the moment, and in many ways unprecedented, but at your time at the Western Bulldogs in Richmond, did you ever have to fight over the use of your facility with outsiders?
Many times. Well, I mean, even going back as, you know, little time ago as what it was, I mean, when I was coaching Richmond, we were nomads at one stage. We virtually didn't have a ground because right up until probably about round four, the control of the ground was for cricket. Yeah. And, yeah, the Putt Road Oval was exactly that. It was the Richmond Cricket Club that had it for almost half the year, and the Tiger Army had it for the other half the year for footy. But
yeah,
right. we trained at Victoria Park one day, and Gosh's Paddock the next. I can remember one particular summer. I think it was 2007, the summer of 2006-07. We lost, I think, 15 players with injury before the season started, just because all the other grounds, the periphery grounds, were so hard at the time. And when you're nomadic and you're going from one type of surface to another, made it very, very difficult. And that's why clubs have been so protective of their own facilities and having their own ground and being able to have that exactly as they want, you know, in horse racing terms, to get, you know, the turf to exactly the way that makes it best for their players, that they don't break them down.
We're all looking from the outside in regards to my next question here, Plaz, and I am asking you to go into the crystal ball to a degree, but the Essendon coach John Worsfold said today that Joe Danaher is still, quote, a fair way off. I mean, should we be worried for Joe's physical health this year? Do you think we'll see him play this year? And obviously the obvious extension of that is, will he be playing at Essendon next year?
Well, look, I mean, no one knows the answers to that. I think it'll be fascinating when we get through the season. We've got to get into the season again, but once we get through the season, how the trade period, you know, plays out with more players available but less room on lists, and who stays and who goes, and the whole dynamic. I think it'll be a fascinating trade period again. Look, with Joe, I mean, you have to be concerned. We're not now talking about this summer. Well, we're not now talking about this summer and part of last season. We're talking about 2 or 3 years since we've actually sort of seen him be able to put any continuity of football together. And with this break, still then be saying that, you know, he's a fair way off. Well, there's got to be some real concerns there. And look, I would think, as disastrous as what this has been for Essendon and Joe himself, clearly, maybe a fresh start might be the way to go about it. The flip side, watching the vision last night of Buddy Franklin, obviously this period of time has done him the world of good. I mean, that was as free as I've seen him run around on a training track for a long, long time. So you've got maybe one loser out of it and one certain winner out of it. And the fascination about that is that they might end up being teammates in 12 months' time.
They might be. Terry, quickly, before we let you go, reports the AFL is going to push on with the Hall of Fame, obviously without a live audience. Now, you would know, and anyone who has been there would know, that the crowd and the atmosphere on the night make the event. I mean, should they postpone inducting anyone until they can do it properly?
Yeah, look, I was absolutely honoured a couple of years ago to get the opportunity. I loved the function from the time that I was a coach. I mean, that was the time that you were able to go each and every year, and it was the one function that you just, you know, made sure that no matter what was going on, that you went along. It's, you know, such a prestigious night. And you're right, you know, the room is just full of, you know, the legends of the game. When I did get inducted, the thing that I really appreciated and enjoyed the most and from the AFL's hospitality was the fact that the people who had shared the journey with you, whether that be family, whether that be really close friends, you could actually take them along and give something back. I mean, the whole of AFL life is, you know, we're all greedy in it to a certain degree, that, you know, it's our lives and we're living it. And, you know, if we have to give up something else along the journey, or others have to give up something on our behalf, this is the one night where you can actually pay back and sort of say to those people close to you, yeah, thank you for allowing me to live my journey and live the life that I wanted to do. And to have that taken away, I think would be really disappointing. And the only thing that I could say, it wouldn't be the same. Like, they could possibly sort of say, okay, well, next year you can bring those people along and do the same thing. But if that's not the year when you're being inducted, it just doesn't hold the same strength. So personally, I'd be on the side of wait and allow the people to enjoy it in, you know, the best possible way they can with the people that mean the most to them.
Terry Wallace, always a pleasure to talk to you. Better let you get back out into the garden. You must have the best looking garden in Melbourne. But we appreciate your time this afternoon.
Pleasure, guys. Look, the one thing, I just can't wait for footy to be back myself. And I didn't have much to listen to from a point of view closely, but gee, now it's hotting up. It's going to be a really fascinating return.
Terry Wallace, look forward to hearing on the airwaves again as well. SEN and AFL Nation commentator, of course. Make sure you support local, australianmade.com.au. The number, 1300 736 736. You've heard from Player. Have your say next off the speckle text as well. And plenty coming in on Morgan Mitchell v Collingwood. Who has the right of way there? Have your say on that and plenty more. We've got a twin pack of Priest wines, thanks to Mitchelton Winery, to give away as well.